This is the September 4 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the week include Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, Chip Nellinger, also from Morton, Illinois. He's with Blue Reef Agri Marketing. And Dan Zwicker is here from Zwicker & Associates out of Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org. We've recorded just a bit early this week as I've taken some time for vacation at the end of the week. Let's begin, though, with this question for you, Ellen Dearden. What are your thoughts on basis?
Corn basis is terrible along the Illinois River. You don't have to get too far off the river, though, to start seeing much improved basis. And the further east you go, continues to show improvement. I did notice that some of the processors in the Pekin Peoria area were bidding posted bids of a dime over for first half of October delivery on corn. That just says to me that the processors are extremely short bought, and they're getting worried now the longer this crop looks to be delayed, that first half of October is going to be a slot that they don't have enough corn bought. I have seen, local bids been up in that 10 to 15 over, and I know there's been a serious movement of elevator or inquiry from elevators from local processors for quantity corn to be delivered in October, not just the first half. So you are seeing some real discrepancy in basis, even in an area that seems to be well supplied with corn, i.e. Central Illinois, starting to see some real basis discrepancies between, for example, in the processors 10 over to local elevators about 10 under. So that is a major thing I think producers need to be very aware of. And Decatur's been the kind of the benchmark processor around Central Illinois. And again, their posted bid and what they're actually paying aren't always the same thing. And I think people need to really be tuned into this. You know, moving corn on tight basis to me always makes sense, even when the board price is not at all advantageous.
Are you thinking that they need to use basis contracts to do that, or just to flat prices?
I think so. Okay. I think so. In basis contracts, you're dealing with your local elevator, so you will be locked in to delivering to a particular elevator. So you need to keep that in mind, or a particular processor. But it leaves you open if the board can rally. And again, these would be basis people that are going to have corn harvested or have old crop supplies to ship prior to the end of the first half of October.
And just a reminder about how basis works, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you would lock in the basis, and let's make it easy, say it was 10 under, on the idea that the futures price that corresponded with the delivery month, so let's go with January, would go up. And you would then be watching the futures price, January contract, rather than the local elevator price to pull the trigger, right?
And I'm talking corn now, and so there is no January corn. I'd be looking at December or March.
Right. Right.
So, but the best basis that I see is for delivery in the second half of September or the first half of October.
Yeah, I was thinking January delivery for corn and not the futures contract. But yes, is absolutely correct.
And I'm not seeing a hot basis for January delivery, but there are some, at least in this particular locale, there are some pretty good basis yet for December delivery against March futures.
Before we started, you mentioned that you'd like to talk about the potential deal with Japan.
I wanted to talk about how a potential deal with Japan could be really beneficial, and everybody that I know wants to talk about it on corn. But I'd like to point out that if we put together a deal with Japan, and that does look very likely, that corn may not be the big beneficiary. Already, the U.S. over the last decade has supplied between 75 and 80% of their annual corn imports. So we're already the big kahuna supplying corn to Japan. It seems to me that Japan has been a very large global importer of pork as well. And the U.S., typically their buys of pork come from three sources, and it's pretty well split evenly between the U.S., Canada, and the EU. So I would think that Japan, the business to Japan, could lean more on more pork imports than more corn imports. Certainly a deal, if we would establish the new NAFTA, would benefit more so on the corn side of things, since Mexico's the number one buyer of corn and has still been railing corn into their corn deficit areas. But we could supply more corn than could Brazil, which would have higher transportation costs. Japan also probably could import beef from the U.S. They like U.S. beef, and that could be another area of larger use of products from ag products from the U.S. When the U.S. Left the TPP, and without any kind of agreement with that Pacific partnership, the thing is that the only thing that is missing is really Japan. It's the biggest buyer, and they like our products. They like the consistency of our products, and the logistics are there to do that. So I think that's something we ought to consider, that these other trade deals other than China are awfully important as well.
Do you think that the deal struck with Japan will put us on a level playing field with the TPP countries, not currently called the Trans-Pacific Partnership in full? It's got a longer name than that. Or will it fall short of it?
I think it will be very much advantageous on a footing with Japan, but elsewhere, not so much. I think South Korea will fall in line with Japanese products as well. So the two big buyers, and again, they're big buyers of corn from the U.S., but could be extra large buyers of pork as well.
I suppose it's important to note here in the United States that CGB, Consolidated Grain and Barge, is owned by Zinno, which has a terminal in New Orleans. I think that terminal runs more grain through it than all the rest of them, maybe combined. I don't quite recall that figure, but that the Mississippi River system is very important to Zinno, which is a livestock cooperative. So it's just-in-time feeding. So there's just an awful lot of grain and oil seeds as well that go through that one export facility through CGB. So this, it's important, I guess, Alan, maybe to understand the flow of grain across the planet.
Yeah, and Zinno also has a large presence in the Pacific Northwest, so they're shipping out of that area as well. But, you know, the Gulf right now is really down on its export business, particularly of corn. We see that, you know, we always talk about the elevation capacity, but they're well under their elevation capacity now on all grains. But we have been shipping some beans. And if you notice on the export shipments report, we're regularly shipping beans to China. And I think it's interesting that China, what's the grain company called? Costco, has been the big stopper of beans, the September bean contracts. And so my guess is that's the way they're getting hold of these beans, and they don't show up then on the export daily export reports. or even the export bookings reports, because they're actually taking beans that are deliverable and taking them. So I think that's probably where China's coming in under the radar. And I know Jackie mentioned that on her Wednesday afternoon report, that China was still taking beans.
Yeah, there would be two state-owned companies, Sinograin and Kofco, both.
Right, Kofco. But Kofco's been the one that's been taking and stopping the deliveries.
Anything else before I let you go, or a final word?
A final word is that hope is not a marketing plan, and we've had that marketing plan now for how many months, and that just doesn't seem to work out very well. And I think we need to look to make sure you have a plan, and just don't plan to fail.
That's Ellen Dearden. She's with AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. Chip Nellinger also hails from Morton, Illinois. He is with Blue Reef Agri Marketing and joined us for our Commodity Week recording on Wednesday afternoon. I asked Chip to look forward into the Thursday of next week, USDA report, and what he thought, if any, changes would be made.
Yeah, you know, I think the market action of the last few days is starting to show that maybe there's a little bit of a concern that they'll be unchanged to maybe even a touch higher in corn yields. I don't know if I buy that, but it's still early in the process, and I think there's a big unknown here with the later season, later planted corn crop out there. So, you know, I think the corn market's telling you maybe there's a little bit of a fear that they're unchanged or slightly higher. I guess historically speaking, you're probably going to see unchanged on both planted and harvested acreage. Historically, any of those final changes don't come until the January report, so that's out ahead of us. But certainly the market has a negative tone to it right now, obviously putting new lows in this week. Some rain around, cool temperatures. I think there's an assumption that it's a big crop getting bigger, and some fears that the USDA will confirm that on this upcoming report.
So USDA at this point has this crop, corn crop that is the fifth largest on record. That, I think, will surprise many people on its face value. However, the market has been extraordinarily bearish. The mentality maintains that bearish look to it. What will it take to change it?
Well, I think just kind of reversal of the upward trend in yields. I think if they do reverse that lower, even if it's a bushel and a half lower, that might give the market a little bit of a pause that maybe we've gone too low for the time being. It just is funny as we talk to people, and obviously there's, you know, kind of an eye towards trying to grasp onto something that's supportive out here, but it just seems a little bit funny to me over the last week as more and more people have been out into their corn, walking their corn, doing yield checks. It's a pretty consistent theme, at least in the you know, northern portions of the Eastern Corn Belt, that the June corn has a lot of tip back and a lot of problems, and it doesn't look as good as it does from the road. Whether the USDA is going to find that or whether that's the reality, I think it's going to take till the combines roll through it. But there is starting to be a little bit of concern that this later planted corn may not be quite as good as what the initial, you know, the way it looks from the road anyway, but that remains to be seen. And it wouldn't be shocking, you know, when you have 30 plus million acres of corn that are planted in June. I'm not an agronomist, but I think most agronomists, you know, the textbooks would tell you that that's not going to be a full APH or full yield potential. And it's been cooler than average, and, you know, we're running out of daylight and sunshine, and it shows it in the tip back from what we're hearing from some of the reports on this June planted corn.
Have they walked through their bean fields as well, and what are they finding?
Yeah, you know, beans are always a crapshoot, but obviously these rains here that we've had the last couple of weeks of August and, you know, through the first week of September here have likely been beneficial. But, you know, I think kind of reiterating the Pro Farmer Tour, you know, pod counts are a little suspect right now. And it's just really always a crapshoot trying to peg bean yields. But I think there's some optimism out there that some of the late August rains were helpful, but I just don't know. You know, the crop condition report out here Tuesday afternoon is going to show that there's still 10 million acres of beans that, you know, are yet to set pods. And there's a lot of beans out there. We're shortening the daylight up. It's September, so we've only got so much time left. And it just really puts a question in my mind as to whether we can finish out this bean crop. And the pod counts alone would tell me that we have to be significantly below a year ago in yields, at least in my mind. And the USDA currently only has us, what, 3.2 bushels below a year ago. I would think that there's some downward potential for revisions lower in bean yields going forward. Maybe not in the September report, but by the final January report, it wouldn't shock me.
How do you see the next month unfolding, given no real surprises in next Thursday's USDA report? Will we bottom out sometime prior to harvest?
Yeah, you know, I think as far as the beans go, I like the action here of the beans the last couple of days as we start September out here. I think you can make an argument that based on what we talked about with pod counts being lower, at least in the Eastern Corn Belt, later planted crop, you know, whether it happens or not, I think you put a little bit of frost premium into the bean market. Historically in corn, you know, the market now is set up where we have a fairly sizable short position in corn from the funds, well over 100,000, I don't know, arguably close to 150,000 contracts after the first couple trading days of September here. So yeah, same thing there. I think you could easily put a little bit of a bounce in seasonally. This is the time frame the last several years where you could be talking about some sort of a, you know, quote unquote harvest low. They've come earlier than normal the last few years, more times than not. So I think maybe, you know, barring any big change, you possibly putting a bottom in. I don't think you put a big rally in until the combines roll and we really know what's out there. And, you know, that could be well into October before you see something like that.
Anything else before I let you go for the day?
You know, I don't think so. I think that crop insurance is going to play a big part of this. You're at levels here, especially if you think you're going to be below APH, that crop insurance is kicking in right now, providing that kind of synthetic put or revenue guarantee. So there's no real urgency to get too emotional about things right now, or you know, get caught into or scared into sales at these levels until you know more about what your yields are. You've got that crop insurance really giving us a good backstop now, especially in corn, but also in beans.
And a final word.
Again, I just say don't panic out there. This could be a year shaping up where the reality of yields could be way different than the perception of what the market is digesting at current price levels. So time's on our side here. We've got some important, you know, a couple of crop reports ahead of us with the September and the October. But the real, real data is going to be once harvest starts in that January crop report. So no need to panic at these levels, although I think strong bounces are for, you know, protecting price levels at this point. Obviously, the funds tell us that fundamentals don't always matter. They're going to take things to an extreme, and they're in a negative mode right now.
Chip Nellinger is with Blue Reef Agri Marketing. Again, we're recording on Wednesday afternoon because I've taken a couple of days off this week. And Dan Zwicker now joins us. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
More than welcome, Todd.
Let's start with where we are technically. Can you take me through, I think, the bean market first, and then we'll come back to the corn?
Well, the bean market is somewhat generally constructive, price constructive. Last week, we posted a reversal to the upside, and we started it off a little rough this week, earlier this week, but we were able to kind of come back here. In the middle of the week, we still have some time yet before the week finishes out. But the wheat, but that weekly reversal up in soybeans looks to be validated this week. And I think that's a strong signal that the soybean market is kind of hit its, let's say, pre-harvest low or post-harvest low. And we held real nicely above of course, that May low that we had back before we had the weather scare, the planting scare, and that rally that we had during June. So it does look like overall that the soybean market is going to is in position to resume a sideways to higher trend after being in a mostly sideways to lower trend, basically since we made our highs there in that late June time frame. Now, over the past month or so here, we've been more so probably in a sideways range. But it does look like the soybean market is trying to pull out and maybe grind higher as we go on into harvest. And I think for the most part, soybeans is getting their strength. I think from some early harvest reports that the soybean yields are coming in well under expectations. And I think just generally looking around the Midwest, people, I think, are not real optimistic on some of the yields. And I noticed that some of the private people now are starting to talk about a soybean yield maybe down in the middle 40s, whether it's, you know, 46 or 45 or 47. At least it's off of that 50 or that 48, 49, 50 bushel area. I kind of in the opinion that we'll just have to kind of see. We, you know, right at the moment, we don't have any weather issues. The weather's generally warm. The extended models really don't indicate any early frost, at least at this point. But over the years, as I talk to meteorologists and weather guys, they tell me that you really can't tell when a frost is going to come. It'll just show up in a map some morning. It'll open up and that Canadian air from the north will come down. So we'll just have to take one day at a time, but at least for right now, there's really no indication that we're going to have a shortened season. But I think the soybean market is starting to respond to basically ideas that the crop is going to come in fairly short. Now, that's if USDA doesn't change the acres. You know, the acres on soybeans came in on the low side to expectations. And we'll have to see what USDA does with acres as we go on into the October report or November report. But based upon current acreage knowledge that we have and based upon kind of early yield samples and early yield reports that the soybean crop is going to come in more so on the short side of the equation than on the long side.
Given what you see on the trade front with China, do you suppose that the Brazilians will plant more soybeans acres this year and that'll cap the upside potential in the marketplace?
Well, that could very well be. I mean, I think the Brazilians are probably, you know, this is, they're kind of in that decision mode, which way they really want to go, whether or not they want to go with corn or they want to go with soybeans. But yes, I think the fact that the U.S. soybean crop is maybe going to come in on the lower side of the ranges may encourage them to go ahead and plant more soybeans, because I think they're going to expect that the U.S. farmers will probably plant a lot of corn next year if we don't have any weather issues. So that would be my guess that they're going to do. But that's going to depend upon currency evaluations. It's going to depend a little bit about, you know, how trade talks go, if they go at all. That would be my indication that they probably would, Todd.
And then turning your attention to corn, of course, we have to worry some about Brazil, but usually it's about the United States, the largest exporter in the world, the largest crop in the world, second largest grown in China, but doesn't generally come out of that nation. What did it do technically in the month of August?
Well, it was a down month, usually August is somewhat of a sideways type month, but we ended up pretty much kind of a down month in corn. And you kind of look at at least the way we're starting here in early September, that downtrend is continuing as we made new lows on corn for the move down since we made our highs there in June. I think a lot of what was happening to corn, I mean, USDA acreage estimates and their preventative planted numbers on eight corn acres still has a lot of people totally scratching their head on it. But as long as the acreage numbers that USDA have reported, where they reported on the August crop report, and then based upon at least yield samples, we haven't really heard too much on corn harvest yet, but at least on the yield estimates and everything, it looks like the corn yield is somewhere in this 165 to 170, which is not down as much as one would have thought during the planting season. Whereas, you know, USDA started out, I think, at 178 or so. So we're only down about 10 bushels. And being down 10 bushels with the amount of corn that USDA says that we have planted, that it just makes that corn crop, you know, over the 13 billion bushel mark. And as long as those over 13 billion bushels, it's just going to struggle. Now, if something comes along and we see acreage changes, we or probably will see that harvested acres is going to be the one that's going to change a little bit. But that may not change a lot until we get down the road. The thing that I've been a little worried about for the last few weeks is that it looks like we're going to get a fairly clean, should be fairly accurate, ending stocks number here as of September 1st or August 31st because of the lateness of the crop. Not a lot of harvest activity has taken place, so there's no mixing of old crop and new crop together. So we should get a pretty good clean number on September 1. But since everything is so late this year, I'm afraid we're going to still be harvesting during the December stocks report, when that survey is taken in late November and the first few days of December. So I'm not too sure how clean a number we're going to get in December. And that's going to kind of forbid USDA to kind of back their way out of the and come up with a production number, because, you know, you take that September number and then you see what your December 1 stocks number is, and you subtract that out, and you say, okay, this is how much we kind of used. And then you kind of count your exports, you kind of count your crush, you kind of estimate what domestic usage is, and then you kind of think what your yield is, and you think what your acres are, and you kind of multiply and divide and subtract and try to come up with a more solid plantings number or harvested number, a more solid yield estimate, and what kind of, but I think since harvest will be going on in December, we may not get a real good reading on overall supplies of grains until we maybe get to that March 31st number, and then we're already halfway through the marketing year. So I'm a little concerned with what kind of reports we're going to be getting and how accurate they're going to be because of this late harvest that's going to be coming at us. One of the latest harvests that we've probably seen in modern times if we don't have an early frost. Now, if we have an early frost, well, then that may speed things up a little bit. But I'm a little concerned that we're not going to get any real good solid numbers until, you know, we get halfway through the marketing year, and then probably by that time, it doesn't really make a difference what we get, because it'll depend a lot what we're growing in South America, and it'll a lot depend upon what the spring weather pattern is and what farmers' intentions are going to be for the 2020 crop year. So, but the corn market, at least what we know based upon USDA's acres and what we know about yield estimates, we just got too much supply of corn around, and we, you know, Ethanol demand is going to probably have to be cut a little bit based upon the small refinery exemptions that we've seen. It looks like maybe, you know, we'll see what carryover numbers are, because we're going to get a good number at least on that. Farmers still were probably holding on some old crop corn. That kind of put some pressure here on the market here as we finished up August, and now we're beginning September. Now, seasonally, the month of September, you know, it's when 85% of the time corn prices close lower for the month of September, and usually go lower into the first 10 days or so of October and make harvest lows. I don't know if that's where we're headed or not, but at least seasonally, it's real hard to get corn or soybeans to really rally during September. And if they do rally in September, then that tells you you got a counter seasonal move. And then that means there's something changed in the marketplace, such as a short crop or unexpected demand or something around the world that would change that. And I think that's more likely going to be the case in soybeans than probably corn, at least at this point in time.
I guess I shouldn't ask about this early week low in the corn market and whether we might be able to post an outside up month. That doesn't seem likely.
Well, but these are how outside months happen. I mean, that's the first thing I do as a technician is watch those first few days of the new month and whether or not we're making new highs for the season or we're making new lows for the season. And then if something changes in the middle of the month, changes the complexion, all of a sudden the market flips, and there you got your monthly reversal up or your monthly reversal down. And that's kind of what happened to us. You know, during the month of June, we made our highs early in the first half of the month. And then, of course, when USDA came out with their acreage numbers, it just threw everybody a curveball. We closed sharply lower there for the month of June. But these are how monthly reversals are usually made. And actually, on a daily basis on corn, I can visualize some divergences between price and some of the technical indicators. And that would kind of suggest that this weakness that we're seeing in corn this week, we could be nearing an end of this. And based upon the technical indicators not making or not sinking to new lower lows while prices are making lower lows. So there is a chance here that corn could be making their early month low here, and that we could maybe turn this thing sideways and maybe even turn it higher. A lot of that will probably depend upon what USDA reports here on their September report. And it will also depend upon, you know, like I said, weather maps can change in a hurry. You know, all of a sudden, you know, middle part of the month, we might be talking about an altogether different weather pattern that may put some corn in jeopardy. I still talk to farmers that's got a lot of this June corn planted, and they're not very optimistic that that's going to make very much. We may have the acres there, but they're not very optimistic. And then I think they count their growing degree days that they may not get the thing mature until November. So it does appear that we may end up with some frost damaged corn, and that same way the soybeans. We got some beans that were planted awful late. We really didn't get the growing degree days. We kind of ran out of daylight during the summer months. So there's a lot of bean acres out there, again, that I don't think is going to make a lot. But some of those numbers aren't really going to come at us until we go through a couple grain stocks reports, I think. I know USDA will give us some actual yield, measured yields, but I don't know if some of that will be ready for the October report. That's why, you know, usually the October report is the month that you see a lot of changes, because USDA has a lot of data during October. But since this year is so late, maybe some of that data may not show up until you get into the November report.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Very well, Todd.
That's Dan Zwicker, recorded on Wednesday afternoon. You've been listening to Commodity Week. Our other panelists for the week included Ellen Dearden of AgriView and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. Both of them are from Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.